the evening before that, on Halloween, All Hallows Eve Day, they would dress up and as characters and basically laugh at death, to do things about death that showed death is a joke for us because we know where we go after we die. So I know the heathen have tried to steal that holiday away, but I'm not going to let them have it. So happy All Hallows Eve Day. Turn in your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 29. We've been going through the book of 1 Samuel, and I've really enjoyed taking a fresh look at this book. It started out more as the story of Samuel, and then it became about King Saul, the first king of Israel. And then the last third or so of the book is a lot about a young David. David, who was anointed as the king of Israel, and yet he was living much of his life on the run. And David, throughout his life, you see that he was rejected constantly. In all of those relationships where you would hope to find belonging, David found rejection in his family at home. He was scorned because, as the younger brother, he was just out taking care of sheep, doing the job of a servant. When Samuel came and said he wanted to meet, you know, Jesse's kids, David wasn't even counted or invited. And then when he asked about him, he didn't even name him, just called him the little guy out in the field. So he grew up with that. But then he had a great moment when he killed the giant Goliath. But at that point, his brothers said, oh, you're on a pride trip. King Saul, who had told him, you can't do this. Then when he did it, he's like, okay, great. And then there was a hit song written about him. Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s, which I know that David grew to hate that song. Like anybody with a one-hit wonder probably at some point gets sick of hearing that song. But, you know, for him, that song turned Saul, who would become his father-in-law, against him for the rest of his life, on the run from Saul, who was trying to kill him. And that's his father-in-law. And then his wife turned on him and lied about him in order to protect her own skin. He's driven away. His best friend, Jonathan, although always loved him and was kind of loyal to him, but Jonathan still preferred to work for his dad than to be out in the wilderness with David. So finally, David's out in the wilderness, and he starts being like a Robin Hood, helping little villages and farmers and thinking that that will become the place where he belongs. But they turn on him. They disrespect him. They would rat him out to Saul, and he couldn't find a place where he belonged. Well, now as we come to this place, he's finally settled in with the Philistines. So ironic. He killed their champion, Goliath, and now here he is. The only place he feels like he belongs is with the Philistines. And as we've seen the last couple weeks, the Philistines were headed to do war against Israel. And David assured Achan, the Philistine ruler from Gath, I'm all in. I'm with you 100%. But here in chapter 29, you find that finding a place to belong, even with the Philistines, it didn't work. One more time, David experiences rejection. Now, before we jump into the chapter, let's keep in mind, every one of us has a desire to belong somewhere. The word belong, be means to exist, and long is a word, longitude. It refers to the entire distance from start to finish. So belonging means I am in a place that's consistent. There's something I can count on. Here is a constant in my life. And what always disrupts belonging is rejection. And so if we understand that as we read this chapter, then we'll talk about what this might have to do with us. So chapter 29, beginning with verse 1, 1 Samuel. Then the Philistines gathered together all their armies at Aphek, and the Israelites encamped by a fountain which is in Jezreel. The armies are lined up ready to do battle. They're by the valley of Jezreel. They're by what is referred later as Megiddo, or where the Battle of Armageddon will be fought. So they're lined up, and the lords of the Philistines were a large people, and they had various rulers over different areas. So Achan was there in Gath, and he was like the king of Gath or the lord of Gath, and they had all these different guys. So they decided to have a parade so that all of the Philistine rulers could observe the soldiers. And so it says, they passed in review by hundreds and by thousands. But David and his men passed in review at the rear with Achish. They knew it probably might be a little awkward. So he said, you get in line with my guys and we'll be towards the back of the parade. But as they came, I mean, how humiliating. The princes of the Philistines said, what are these Hebrews doing here? Can you imagine? You feel like you belong. You're a part of this massive army. And you're here you are on parade down Main Street. And they're like, what are those Jews doing here? Oh boy. Once again, David could sense this rejection. Is this not David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who has been with me these days, Achish says, and in these years, and to this day, I have found no fault in him since he defected to me? Achish sticks up for him and goes, I've been with him for a long time, and I'm telling you, man, he's a good guy. That's pretty gutsy, and I'm sure to David it felt good to be defended, but the princes of the Philistines were angry with him. So the princes of the Philistines said to him, make this fellow return, that he may go back to the place which you have appointed for him. You can have him, but don't let him go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become our adversary. He'll turn on us. For with what could he reconcile himself to his master? In other words, if he wants to kiss up to Saul, a perfect way to do it would be if he turned on us while we're battling Saul. And then in verse 5, again, that hit song, is this not David of whom they sang to one another in dances, saying, Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s. David's like, that song caused Saul to turn on me. Now, here they're playing oldies, and now it's causing these guys to turn on me as well. So Achish called David, maybe texted him first, but then called him. And he said to him, surely, and he goes, quit calling me Shirley. Now, surely, as the Lord lives, you've been upright, and you're going out and you're coming in with me in the army is good in my sight. I have no problems with you. For to this day, I have not found evil in you since the day of your coming to me. Nevertheless, the Lord's do not favor you. Now, there's two things here I want to point out. First of all, when he says, surely as the Lord lives. Remember, this is a Philistine king talking. Notice the word Lord in your Bible is all capital letters, L-O-R-D in capital letters. That lets you know that it's the translation of the Hebrew word Yahweh, which was the personal name for the Hebrew God. So here Achish knows enough about David's religion to refer to Yahweh in this way and as him living. So either Achish has converted, or at least he respects David's faith enough that he's trying to talk to him in his own language. I think it's interesting. But after talking about Yahweh, but then it's like, but the problem is the lords of the Philistines, they don't like you. And, you know, so you'd think, okay, but I'm with you. No, sorry, I'm with them. So return now and go in peace, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. You have your Lord, but let's not make these other guys mad. So David, Achish is afraid of his own partners in the government, but that's the way it works. That's the way power always works. So David said to Achish, what have I done? Have you found anything in me as long as I've been with you? that I can't go and fight against the enemies of my Lord, the King? Kind of sad that David is now concerned about his Lord, the King. And he wonders, why is he not allowed to go fight against your enemies, Achish? That's the way he sees Israel at this point. Then Achish answered and said to David, I know you are as good in my sight as an angel of God. Nevertheless, the princes of the Philistines have said, he shall not go up with us in the battle. They said it, and sorry, it's done deal. Now, therefore, rise early in the morning with your master's servants who have come with you, and as soon as you are up early in the morning and have light, depart, get out of here. So David and his men rose early to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel to war. Now, as we get into chapter 30 next week, Lord willing, we see that when David goes back home, all things weren't well, even at home. But you're seeing a guy who was as honorable as you could expect someone to be under the circumstances, and yet all he wants to do is belong, and over again, he finds himself rejected. Now, I would caution you not to be too hard on David at this point. Some pastors and some commentators talk about David as if, what's he doing with the Philistines? He's backsliding. That's horrible. He's in sin. He's, you know, this is what happens to you. Well, let me put yourself in his place, which is before you judge anyone, you need to put yourself in their place. Israel has rejected him. The king has. Not only that, here he is with the Philistines who are talking about Yahweh and who are respecting his faith at the very least. What's going on in Israel with Saul? It's a mess. In fact, in the Philistines are fighting, but Saul goes to a witch in order to communicate with the dead to get advice for himself. So witch culture is more pagan at this point. You can make a case, you know. It's like, I'm just not going to sit in judgment on him. The Bible doesn't say what he was doing was wrong, so I'm just going to leave it at that. This is what happened, but I want to be understanding of this at the same time. So let's zoom back a little bit and talk about rejection, because I'm sure that most of us at one time or another had a place where we felt like we belonged. And then a message came down that let us know you are being rejected. You actually don't belong the way you thought you did. This happens in a lot of ways. For some people, it has to do with family. If there's a place where you ought to feel like this is where I am long term, this association defines who I am, it should be family. But many people, their family rejects them. I mean, there are many people who, when they get married, they make this promise, you know, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, sickness and health, love and cherish as long as we both shall live. Long, that's where I belong. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's over. Someone leaves you. And sometimes you didn't even see it coming. It's like, whoa, we belong together, you know. No, we don't. I'm out of here. And how crushing that is. Or when your kids don't want anything to do with you, or your siblings or your parents or whoever, people go through all sorts of experiences that cause them to go, the place where I feel the greatest rejection is from my own family. Because family is the place where I need the greatest sense of belonging, and now my own family makes me feel like I really don't belong here anymore. But there are other things. Sometimes it's your friends. You have a certain group of friends that are like, they're your ride or dies, they're gonna be with you forever, but over the years, you kind of go in different directions. It's like, there's somebody who used to be my best friend, but now I don't even think we're friends at all. And that rejection, you know, it throws you off balance. It makes you feel like, whoa, how did this happen? For some people, it revolves around their work. For a lot of people, their job ends up becoming the place where they belong. They feel more at home, in a sense, when they're at work than when they're at home, because they spend so much time and effort in their most waking hours serving for a company. But sometimes you get rejected by your company. My next door neighbor when I was growing up worked for Disneyland, and he loved Disneyland. He probably loved Disneyland as much as Nate, our worship leader, does, and that's a lot. But my neighbor actually helped build Disneyland in Anaheim, and he knew Walt Disney. And he was so loyal to the company that, I mean, it was nice as a neighbor because he'd get me into Disneyland for free, and then when I'd get kicked out for spitting off the Skyway, he would get me back in. He worked from being a construction guy to where he was the head of operations at Disneyland. But as one of the original employees, they had signed an employment contract that told them after, I think, 30 years, you would vest and you would get a certain pension and you would get stock options from Disneyland. And his whole life, he's just looking forward to that. So when Disney figured out that they had made those deals, when there were like 3 months left before he would vest, all those guys, except for the people who are personal friends of Walt Disney and family members, all got fired. And it crushed him. I couldn't believe it. The worst thing for him is he still needed a job, and he went and worked at Knott's Berry Farm. And he felt like, I mean, kind of the way I feel like I've been cheering for the Dodgers, and now I'm cheering for the Braves. Yeah, it's like, wow, what happened here? How did this go? And, you know, I'd feel way worse if I was cheering for you know who. But, you know, it's like, where did this... I thought we were comfortable. I thought I belonged. And now this has been yanked away from me. I saw a story this week that I thought was kind of amusing, but first service, no one laughed at it at all. But I'll try it out on you. And if you think I'm disgusting, then I won't use it third service. But I read that in 2005 in South Africa, there was a guy named Marius Els. And he had rescued a baby hippo who was being washed down the river. And he went and got it, and he pulls it to shore, and he raised it, and they bonded together, and he raised that little hippo like it was one of his family. And about 6 years later, the hippo grabbed him and pulled him into the river and ate him. Okay, at least that's better than nothing. But it's like, you want to feel rejection? Well, I thought you were like my kid. No, I'm a hungry hippo. You're my meal, you know. But for many of us, life has done that in different ways. Sometimes your church does that to you. Sometimes you're like, church is the place where we're all, and then all of a sudden, man, your church is burning you. You're feeling stabbed in the back. You're feeling like, your church, it's just not, I'm not welcome here anymore. People go through those sorts of things where the sense of belonging gets snatched away from you by whatever kind of rejection is actually happening. And that's what he was going through here. And it had to have been difficult and heartbreaking for him. Nothing else that he did helped him to feel like he belonged. And now he felt like he belonged until he didn't anymore, until it didn't fit with what was going on with the rest of the Philistines. So there are some things that we can learn through this for sure. One of the things I think is that you need to understand that when you are rejected by something that gave you a sense of belonging, as painful as that is, it's also a great rescue. Because now you are being taken away from something that you trusted, but they weren't worthy of your trust. See, like I've known people who their spouse just, boom, turned on them and divorced them. And they're like, how could they do this? And I'll go, well, I'll tell you one thing. If that was what their heart was, it's good that you know that they aren't someone that you belong with. You're actually being rescued. I have told people after, I knew this one gal who, her husband was just a real loser. She worked really hard and he didn't. And so then when they divorced, he was hitting her up for all this money, spousal support, and everything else. And she's like, he's cost me like $60,000 just to get rid of him. And I said, that's a bargain. Pay $60,000 to get that guy out of your life, to find out that I don't really belong there. Whatever your life costs you, to extract yourself from a relationship whereby you in some delusional way thought it was something that it isn't, whatever it costs you, that's called tuition. That's something that you pay to learn what you needed to know. So, oh, you lose friends. Okay. Wouldn't you rather know than not? Wouldn't you rather, you know, understand what that is so that you can move on with your life? How far do you want to go with the Philistines, David? If the truth is most of the Philistines hated you, what if your buddy had talked them into just letting you go along, but we'll watch carefully? I mean, how would that feel, that you're risking your life for these people? We need to live our lives in such a way that we understand belonging somewhere where we really don't belong. We've got to do whatever we can to be extracted from that delusion. And the truth is, wherever you've been, you work for a company, you think they're one thing, you find out they're another. Thank God that you found out, that you weren't just continuing to be sucked along. Anything that it's cost you from being delusional about them before, God has mercifully rescued you in a way that costs you enough that you'll remember this lesson for sure. And so we need to look at rejection as an opportunity for us to be rescued, because that's a part of it. Now, there's something else that comes into play here. When you're talking about all these princes of the Philistines and stuff, it points out a good principle, and that is anyone who rejects you where you thought you belonged, but then you don't, it almost always has to do with power and bureaucracy and organization and a corporate mentality. That's the way it always is. See, because that's the way the world works. The way people find their own niche, they create it. They set things up and they use good principles of management and leadership in order to create a power structure where they know where they fit and they know where other people fit, and now they know what to expect. But when you are rejected, it's because you don't fit with their personal agenda. And that's just the way it is. And that's why, you know, sometimes churches, as they become more structured, there's a lot more of a chance for someone to be rejected because you don't fit with our personal mission statement, or you aren't the type of person that we want in our church. Sorry, you don't fit here, because we know what we want our church to look like, our business to look like, our family to look like. Everyone who excludes someone and rejects them is rejecting them because you don't serve my purpose. And that's one reason why the rescue is so important. But it's one reason why Jesus talked to the disciples and he goes, listen, here's the way the world does it. No judgment. But in my kingdom, here's how we do it. You want to be great in my kingdom? You learn to be the servant of all. And he didn't say, that's what you do. You be the servant of everyone until you start getting bigger and having more corporate assets and then making greater vision and plans for the future. The church is systematically being destroyed by corporate mentality. But the cost of that is that people who need a place to belong are ending up being rejected because they don't fit the mold. And so, you know, that's simply what was happening here. Sorry, we have this corporate structure. You rock the cart, so you are disposable. That's why David was rejected, even though he was a great leader and a great soldier, but he didn't fit with their agenda. One of the things that I think of for David here too, he was way better off in the wilderness. He was way better off out there wandering around, even though he couldn't count on the people in the wilderness, and even though there was no way that he was going to get huge, there was no way that he was going to get famous, he was going to bide his time. But a lot of times, it turns out, you're more secure in the wilderness than you are trying to social climb and be someone that you're not and impress people you don't like who will turn their backs on you at any point. You really don't want to be a part of the in crowd if being a part of the in crowd sets you up to someday be out when you don't fit anymore. The wilderness isn't always such a bad place. Another thing for David, and this is true for us as well, even though rejection is heartbreaking, even though it's challenging and difficult and it just rips you apart, where your sense of belonging is completely shattered, those rejections are opportunities for some great clarification, especially when it comes to your relationship with God. When people let you down, it gives you a chance to see that there is a difference between those people and God, because he is still here for me and he has nothing to gain. And he sent his son to die for me. He loves me that much. David figured this out. And over in Psalm 27, he said, "When my father and my mother reject me, then the Lord will pick me up." Someone rejects you. There's one who doesn't, and you can begin to see him much more clearly. I suspect for most of us that when we think of the times when we really connected with God desperately, where we really needed him, it was probably because someone we were counting on let us down. This is the way it is. It may have been friends or church or work or family or whoever. There's a clarification that comes as one of my Bob Dylan lyrics that I like, when you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose. And that's a powerful place to be when it comes to the Lord. But also, since I'm talking mostly to people who have committed their lives to Jesus Christ, there's another aspect related to that. And that is, if you become a child of God, if you receive Jesus, you take up your cross and you follow him, you know what? You're never going to completely fit in this world. Jesus in John 17, praying for the disciples, he said, "They are not of this world, even as I am not of this world." See, by being a child of God, you're already saying, "I'm never going to completely fit here. And I accept that. That's just the way it is. Not that I don't engage with people, but I'm not counting on belonging with them in order to create my identity." There was that old Christian song, "This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through." There's something sad about that and something incredibly empowering. Or Larry Norman did the song, "Don't ask me, I'm only visiting this planet." Once you realize you're just a visitor here, that this is not the place where you're supposed to fit, it's truly empowering to just go, okay, it's not supposed to feel like this. I am supposed to be rejected by most. Jesus was. He's God. He comes into the world, and he was rejected by pretty much everyone. But also, you learn something by looking at the disciples that he chose. They were a bunch of losers. Every one of them rejected in one way or another, and they were gathered together, and like they didn't get along that well, but they all knew what one of the disciples said when Jesus gave him a hard saying. He goes, "Unless you eat my body and drink my blood, you can't have any part in me." And most of the people are like, "We're out of here." Not cannibals. But there are a handful of disciples who are left. And when Jesus said, "How come you guys aren't leaving?" they didn't say, "Well, we understand you're speaking metaphorically." They said something very telling. "Where else would we go? You have the words of eternal life." And that's what the people of God are supposed to be. Not a place of complete belonging, but a place where we are drawn together because we face the difficult reality that none of us really belong here, nor are we ever going to get completely comfortable and at home. And if we are, it'll only set us up for failure, but we have no other place to go. That was the disciples, and that, at its essence, is the New Testament church, where it's like you're made up like a body of all these different organs. Everybody needs everyone else, but you can't be, the nose can't be the hand, the foot can't be the kidney. Now, we're just so different, but somehow something good happens when we realize, yeah, this life is weird, and I'm surrounded by weird people, and there are other people who think I'm weird. Welcome to the church. Welcome to the people of God. If you're fooling yourself into trying to make the church more than that, to make it some corporal entity that is like, we know what we're doing and we have a plan, and then all of a sudden, people are going to be rejected. People won't fit because we just need to hire professionals to do everything, so it won't be so messy. But the church, it's the place, like the disciples, where it's like, and it's like David's guys in the wilderness. They were all broke and distressed and everything. They had no place to go. And it was depressing to David to be out in the wilderness with all these losers. But it turned out those losers were the ones who were going to be with him. And all of the people that he thought were awesome weren't. His best friend Jonathan ultimately gets killed fighting alongside his dad. He's not there. His first wife, she's not there with him. Later, after he becomes king, spoiler alert, he'll just go and kidnap her from her husband at the time. But nothing changed for David. Throughout his whole life, even when he was the winner on top, he didn't belong. And the people who were most dependable in his life were the ones who were the raw-edged people that you think, they've all been rejected by everyone, and so that's why they are here. And that's the makeup of the church. And there is a powerful truth that when you get people who understand none of us belong, so let's get together, let's form a club like David's Mighty Men of all the people who don't belong. Let's make the church a place where you're welcome here if you're not welcome anywhere else. That's amazing and powerful. And if you study history, that's what America was. That's how America started. It was British people who didn't fit in England. It was French people that hated France. It was the Dutch that didn't like Holland. It was the people from every other place in the world who were then thrown together, and they're like, here we are. Here we are, this new country of rejects, of people who don't fit anywhere else. Now, over time, you start to form a particular identity, and it begins to destroy that which you originally started out to do. But even the French really admired the United States in the early days, because what they had tried to do in the French Revolution, but ultimately there were too many powerful bureaucrats to really pull it off. So they looked at America and thought, that's a place where outcasts fit in. And they loved it. It's one of the reasons why the French made the Statue of Liberty to be put in New York Harbor. And, you know, inscribed on it were the last couple stanzas of the poem by Emma Lazarus called The New Colossus. And on that statue, and if you've been there and seen it, it should move you greatly, because it could be about the church as much as it was about America when America started, where the message was, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, you know, longing to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your shore. Give them to me, the homeless, those who are, what's the last line of it? The wretched refuse from their teeming shores, the homeless, send me the homeless, the tempest tossed to me. And I lift my lamp next to the golden door, beside the golden door. It was like, that's what America was supposed to be. It was like, we want people who don't fit to come here. And it made us an amazing nation. One of the reasons why we were successful in the American Revolution is because there were other people who were aristocrats, like notably the French, but a lot of others as well, who were like, I hope these losers win. I want to see there to be a place like this. And as a result, we got the support. We established our independence. It wasn't too much longer after that that we began to decide that, no, we are an aristocracy, and we need a king, and we're going to form this huge government. And we just became, in some ways, another version of climb your way to the top mentality. But the identity, the hope of the new nation was that somehow there could be a place where people who don't belong could fit together. And I would propose to you that the Church of Jesus Christ, from Jesus' mouth himself, that's what he desired for us to be. That the more we structure, the more we organize, the more we exclude, the less we become the place for people who don't belong anywhere else. God help us if people who don't belong anywhere come here and find out they don't belong here either. Believe me, I can see how weird some people are. I'm so glad that they have a place where they can come. And I'm not talking about any of you. I'm talking about, you know, First Service people. But but there's a beauty to deciding, I'm not going to let someone else determine my worth. I'm not going to try to fit in a place where I don't. I'm going to get together with people where we're all united by the fact that we don't fit. We don't fit anywhere. Why? Because we are citizens of another country. Because we were designed for heaven. And no one who's designed for heaven, no one who's a child of God, is ever going to feel like this is home. If this feels like home, you need to have your eyes open to the fact that you were created for so much more than this. When we look all around us, our opportunity is to find people who are being rejected, who don't belong, and to find a way to help them believe, not that we have our own cult that they can be a part of, but that if they feel like they've been rejected, we understand, because we've experienced rejection. We know what that's like. There are people in our world today, all you have to do is look at, over the last couple of years, what the suicide statistics have done. There are a lot more people who are deciding that they don't fit in this world anymore. And there are different reasons for it, from kids being bullied on the internet and being told they should die, and then they believe it and they do. They feel so rejected that they don't want life. To people who devoted their lives to serving our country in the military, laid their lives on the line, and yet today they feel so alienated. They feel like, I don't know where I belong. At least when I was in the service, I belonged there. You know. But then they look and go, the message that we send them is, we're talking about giving more money to one illegal immigrant that comes across our border illegally than we give to a soldier who has devoted their very life to serving this country, and we spend less on them in medical benefits than we're talking about just paying to people to get them to go away. No wonder military veterans, on the average, 17 of them kill themselves every day. People who were willing to die for our country, and now they feel so alienated that they don't fit in anywhere at all. People today desperately need the message, yes, you don't fit, man. This world is nuts. But there's a God who understands and loves you. And if you'll hang out with the people that don't fit, we're heading to a place where we will fit, where it all works out, where it's even, where we can find that security that we were born with. If you're born with a desire for something that this world can't provide, you were probably created for another world. And that's what it is with the people of God. If you're here today or you're listening and you feel like, I've never fit. I've been burned. I've been stabbed in the back. I've been betrayed. I can relate to David. Well, David understood, ultimately, finally, that I actually belong in another world. And I'm spending my time down here not expecting, not counting on, not looking for a place to totally fit in this world. Because ultimately, and like for David, in the next chapter, we see he faces some horrible things. And for the first time in a long time, he turns to God. He cries out to him. And if your trouble makes you do that, it served a really valuable purpose. But I want you to know, maybe in this world, you will never belong. Join the club. But I'll tell you this, there is a world where you do belong. And it makes this life bearable as we share our experiences of rejection, knowing that this is temporary. There's another place we actually belong, and it's with him in heaven. And the Bible teaches us that if we just receive Jesus, we allow him to give us new life, then our citizenship is now in heaven. Now we're just tourists looking at what's going on down here and going, boy, I'm glad this is temporary. I'm glad this doesn't last forever. You know, like people who go, you know, there's no marriage in heaven. And some people are like, thank God. But I should say that there are studies that say that married men live a lot longer than single men. So I believe in marriage as an institution. But the same study showed that married men are much more willing to die. I could be really brave when Anne's homesick and she told me she listened to First Service, so I think I'm okay. Donna, don't tell her. But that's us. We're people that come together because we don't belong anywhere. And that's not a bad thing. To be delivered from the delusion that something else, someone else, someplace else is going to do what only heaven can do for us. If you've never received Jesus, then I would suggest that you get right with him today. It's amazing how it feels when you find out you do belong somewhere. But that somewhere, you're just going to have to wait. In his timing, you'll get there. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for letting us know, watching even one of the greatest men who ever lived demonstrate that wherever we go, rejection will follow the delusion of acceptance. And yet, David found his home with you. And we want to as well. I thank you that we as a church, that we as the people of God, can accept those who are different than we are. That we don't have to organize and structure and eliminate anyone who doesn't fit with our vision. That we've joined this club because we know we don't belong. Help our church to always be that kind of place where no one's excluded because we're all just trying to share the common experience of rejection. Lord, if there's somebody here or listening who has never given their life to you, help them to know it's really true. It's real. Life can begin again for them, and their citizenship can be somewhere way better than this place. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's all stand.